Okay, so in the middle of our Gemara, our Mishnah was talking about Gzeirot on Gzeirot and more Gzeirot and more Gzeirot
on,
right? So at some point, the Gemara picks up on this, right? And the Gemara says, "Bisuria maskirin batim." Let's go there. The Gemara says, "Maishna mechira delo mishum mechira d'art Israel." But you can't sell land in Syria, but you can rent it. Why can't you sell it? Because it's a gzeirah up to selling land in Chutz Laaretz. So Gemara says, "Ihachim ischiras nami nigzar." Once you're telling me that we set up decrees to protect the land of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we enforce prohibitions in Syria that shouldn't apply meikar din, but we apply them as a gzeirah, right? A decree, right? So Gemara says, why don't you set up a second order gzeira?
Right? As a side thing or as
a second order gzeira, right? Meaning, right, you can't sell land in Eretz Israel, therefore you can't sell land in Syria, therefore you can't rent land in Syria. Right?
Okay.
Right? That's second order.
Okay.
Yeah? Second
fine.
Order?
That's not allowed.
The Gemara says, why don't you do that? Second order. Okay?
So the Gemara
says, why are you guessing? Open a Gemara and look.
I'm talking about in the beginning, in the parsha part.
It's in your Gemara, which is not open.
Actually, is wait. Oh, are we reading the sheets then?
I don't know why you're reading the sheets.
Why are you reading the sheets?
I don't know.
Cooling Beza and.
Oh my gosh! But when he started reading, and you're like, oh, he's not reading the same words. Hmm? Why wasn't the alarm?
Come on, we start. We always start in our Gemara. I don't give you random sugyas. I understand. Look, I understand that some of the other shirim do like pre-Yom Tov shirim, in which case, yes, you wouldn't be looking in our Gemara at all, and maybe we should do that. But in the meantime,
he expects us to already be holding in those sugyas because we're learning them outside of shir. So we don't go through them. We stick to our sugyas.
Right. Now, we could do Yom Tov. But in the meantime, I told you guys, we're doing a sugyan of a Dezari Chav Aleph. Make sure you know the Gemara backwards and forwards because we're going to be spending a long time in the Zamud. Make sure you go through it. You all said, we know it backwards and forwards.
I never said that.
I never.
You're right. You all said we at least know it forwards, somewhat, right?
No, wait,
maybe only backwards. Test me only backwards. I only understand sugyas backwards. The Gemara says, why don't you take a second order gzeira? And the Gemara says, you can't. He gufa gzeira v'anu nekem gzeira legzeira. You can't do that. It isn't a decree. We don't set up decrees protecting decrees. Gemara says, wait a second. Renting a field in Syria is itself a second order gzeira. So the Gemara says, no, because we do make a gzeira. So Gemara says, no, hasam lav gzeirahu, ksavar kibush yachich, me kibush, sada b'zir tada gozer b'rabanan, batim lez b'utar de lo gozer b'rabanan. This is according to the Shita, that kibush yachich, me kibush, and therefore Syria is itself kadosh, and therefore anything that is usher in Syria is not because of gzeira, it's because it's intrinsically problematic. And then the Gemara explains why we prohibit what we do and why we prohibit what we don't, which we've already discussed. Okay, tarte, lo tarte, whatever. This is a rule, though, that is worth understanding because it appears in many places in Shas, which is called Ein Gozrin Gzeira Ligzeira, which people will translate as you don't make a decree to a decree. But you can, that's a literal one. But like I said, the proper English translation is probably we don't make second order decrees. Right? Right? That means, right, in very simple English, if you have a, right, you have a value in the middle that you're trying to protect, right, you protect it with one zera, right, one level removed, and then you don't try to protect this with a second order zera.
Wait,
right?
You don't try to protect X, you don't try to protect.
You don't try to protect this, right? We don't try to protect the violation of a gzeira, right? Meaning, we don't want you to eat meat and milk. Because meat and milk, which is cooked together, is... Meat and milk cooked together is... No, it's meat and milk. It's meat and milk. It's not treif, right? That's exactly the point, right? Now someone's listening. What? You said you can eat meat and milk? No, I didn't. Treif is a very... It's asur because it is basar b'chalav. In fact, it's worse than treif. Treif is a very specific type of not kosher food, which is something that
is also awesome.
Has one of the simanei tarfut, right? Meaning it had one of the 18 simanim that prove that it won't live for a year, which were passed down halachal Moshe Mi-Sinai, and therefore they're not kosher because they're treif. Basar b'chalav is not kosher because it's basar b'chalav. Right? This is like people who say, oh, you can't turn on a light on Shabbos because it's mukta. No, mukta is derabanan. Turning on at least an incandescent light bulb gets you the death penalty. It's not mukta, right? It's called havara or bishul according to the Ravid. Fine, right? Or lighting a fire, right? Mukta. No, it's a pasuk. Lo sevaru eish b'chal moshe zechem. Drives me nuts, right? Drives Ora even more nuts than me. This is why Ora insists that our kids know malacha. And that's why she since Meir was like two, whenever she'd like try to tell them something outside of Shabbos, she would explain the malacha. So like, you know, if like Meir would like see someone pulling out hair, be like, you can't do that, it's gozes.
Oh my God. Go away, little child.
Well, we loved it because in Alon Shvud, I once saw this, that someone was a kid, like a 5-year-old, was playing with a umbrella, and an adult said, don't do that, it's my hill, according to the Behuda. And it's like, you know, there are madrigas of what you tell people.
Son corrects him, he's like, no, it's not.
No, that's right, it is my hill, according to the Behuda. Oh, that was correct. That was the right answer. That was the right answer, right? Not in Jeopardy style, because it wasn't asked as a question, but it was the right answer to the question.
You can picture your son getting up in, like, third grade and correcting the teacher on, like, everything.
Ora woke up one day, and like, on Shabbos, and, you know, like, we just let the kids sleep, and she went into the playroom, and Meir is sitting there with the Hilchos Shabbos book by Baruch Chait, you know, the picture one, which is actually very good.
39
that one, yeah, it's awesome.
That's like so old, but it's amazing.
It's incredible. The footnotes are amazing. Yeah, and like teaching Aaron about the malacha, you know. You know,
your children are growing up post Gemara. It's amazing.
Baruch Hashem. So this is the point, right? So no, Baz Bechol is not.
The entire point of Shabbos: live around good.
Yes. So the point is, well, Ara told me a great story yesterday. She has Deborah Broyd in her class, or Broyd's daughter. And she said that once they came into shul, and the kids were playing with sticks. Right? And so Deborah said, and then the rabbi told us that if we want to use sticks on Shabbos, we have to prepare them in advance, they won't be mukta. By which I mean, my father dragged me to shul every Shabbos early to set aside sticks so we could use the sticks on Shabbos and be miyachid them for building. I'm like, that is an awesome educational lesson for the kinderlach over there in Atlanta. Baruch Hashem. What?
Yeah. My parents just told me don't play with sticks, you're gonna poke at
me. No, well, that's
the Rabbi Roy's approach.
You can play with sticks, but you must come early on Erev Shabbos and be miyached them. Forget it, it isn't worth it. Right? You know? Fine. So the Gemara says
sticks.
Right?
You ain't allowed to just play with sticks. Most of it is sitting now.
Oh, I'm sorry, we didn't take out our phones on Shabbos like you probably did in Miami.
Oh. What malachas there was, all right?
Just kidding. I'm not sure if that happens.
That was Srefa because it was a bird.
The Floridians.
No. Yeah, anyways.
It's a joke. It's
you know, people. Smartphone.
Right? I got it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fine. So.
That was
good. Good. Okay. So this is a general rule. Now, as we know, right? And if you don't know, I'm really, then you do not practice rabbinic Judaism. There are 613 mitzvot and many, many, many more rabbinic laws that complicate the picture of the Torah. Anyone not know that yet? Right? In fact, how often does it happen that one even comes close to violating a biblical law that's not ben adam l'chavero, right? Not so come ben adam l'chavero all the time.
Because of all the other ones, it's practically impossible.
Correct. Like, and you wouldn't even know, right? It's like, it's even so, it's so bad that people think, like, people think that actual daraisas are not daraisas, right? Because, like, they're not even aware of them, right? They know the rabbinic things, like, oh, I would never touch a car on Shabbos, which isn't even a thing. Right, you're allowed to touch muksa. That's according to most poskim. That's not a thing. You're not allowed to move muksa, right? But like borer, they've never heard of, right? Or like,
why is
you know,
why is moving or like problematic as opposed to touching?
What? Because that's the
no,
the xeris
no, rabbanan. Most people say no. The thing is, most people say not touching it because they don't want to that it goes to a different level.
Yeah, but that's a problem because that would be xeris, right? Because the problem is moving, and according to most poskim, there's no problem in touching. There are poskim who think there is, but Majority of postmen think, not that way.
Because they think it will lead to something else.
Yes, but that's what we're doing. Don't do that. As opposed to, like, you get a spill, you spill something on your shirt and at the Kiddush on Shabbos, and your grandmother, not your grandmother, obviously, and someone else's grandmother comes over and says, oh, hey, let's put some water on it before it stains, which is a capital crime, which deserves the death penalty according to all positions, right? So,
off with our head.
Never trust the old grandmother.
Right?
Papa Misa, there's a reason that, you know.
Yeah, anyways.
Papa Misa.
There's a reason they call it that.
Good. So, but as we know, we have rabbinic laws upon rabbinic laws upon rabbinic laws. And yet, the Gemara tells us here that there is a rule which I want to analyze, right? Which is, Ein gozrin gzeira l'gzeira. Right, we don't make second order gzeira. We don't try to protect rabbinic laws, which makes sense, right? If the point of the rabbinic law was
to protect
the biblical law, so you don't need to
protect
the rabbinic law, right? Like, what's the worst that'll happen? They'll violate the rabbinic law. Okay, the rabbinic law was set up to protect the biblical law, right? Now, that the Gemara that presents it as a rule, seemingly, is the Gemara in number one. Now in the source sheet, or the Gemara in Yevamot. Hacha ilav shniut pago be'erva gufa. So the Gemara says, right, we're worried about, right, we put up second types of arayot, shniot. Right, shniot are women who on a biblical level you could marry, and on a rabbinic level you cannot, right, shniot la arayot. But we're worried that what will happen is you'll be pogei be'erva etzma, that you would end up being with a woman who's biblically prohibited to you, okay? So, but how do you know that we don't then set up protective zerot around that? So Rav Kahana Amar, me'acha, ushmartem et mishmarti, asu mishmeret limishmarti. So sorry, how do you know that you set up zerot, right? And then you'll see, Rashi will explain, right, how we, what we do this. Set up, protect my laws. So Amar le'abai Yosef ha'da araisihi. The Gemara says, no, araiso pershu rabbanan. Right? Is that a real rule? Right? Is that rabbinic? He said, no. It is a pasuk which is interpreted by the rabbis. The Gemara said, kol tarah nami pershu rabbanan. That doesn't mean it's not biblical, right? All biblical laws, most of them are psukim that are then interpreted. So the Gemara said, no. Rabbanan across machlav alma. That's not the real pasuk for zerot. And in fact, that is what many Rishonim say. That this is not, in fact, the source. What is the source that you should protect biblical law with rabbinic laws? Whatever, Svara, right? Lotasar, you have to listen to the rabbis, and logically what you should do is you should protect, right? You should protect the law. It's in fact the first mission of breaking a vote, as you all know. You better. Asu siagla Torah. Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Misara li Yeshua. Yeshua l'skenim, l'skenim l'nevim. L'nevim nisaru alanchei kineset abdolah. Hey, mamrush loshad farim. Havei metunim badin. Bamidu tamidim harbei vasyu siagla Torah. Mishnah Aleph and Perkei Avot. Make a fence for the Torah. Right? Torah here. Put a fence. Okay? Fence. Protect it. Okay? Now, so you go skip for a moment to four. Rashi says, "Ha'darmina b'kulo Talmud she'en gozrin gzera legzera." So Rashi says, why is it that throughout the Torah we see the Gemara, we see that you don't make second order gzerot? Mehaikra nafka. He argues that this is in fact a derivative of that original pasuk, which is a bit strange because remember the Gemara said that pasuk itself is only a dira, only an asmachta. But ushmartem et mishmarti, asu mishmeret, klomar gzeira, l'mishmarti. God tells you, make a mishmeret, protect my law. Right? L'mishmarti, meaning l'torati. V'lo mishmeret, l'mishmeret, lo yaseh gzeira, l'gzeira. And now this, if you ever hear it, you will hear people saying this, which is, right, this is the Torah, right, we protect it, don't protect the protection, right? Asu mishmeret limishmarti, right? God says I want you to protect my law, but not your law, right? And the second order gzeira would be a protection of
yours.
Okay. Now, if you read that Rashi, what would you assume? What would you assume? I'll put this in two ways. If I ask you, why don't the rabbis set up second order gzeirot, what would you say based on Rashi?
set up.
Or in English, they can't. Why can't? Why don't they? Because they can't. Right?
Right.
Correct? That's Rashi. Right? Very simple. They don't because they can't. Right? Why not? It's very simple. The way Rashi understands it, which is complicated because he gets this out of a pasuk the Gemara rejects as the source, but fine, is that God grants authority, right? I mean, it's really, right? Rashi is asking and answering a theological question. With what authority do the rabbis set up protective measurements to protect the Torah? Because God said so. But God said, look, I give you legislative capabilities to protect me, and not legislative capabilities to protect your legislation. Therefore, they lack the authority. Right? They lack the authority. Right? This, I don't want to get into the larger question of why do we listen to Chazal in general? Right? Where does that power come from? But whatever that authority is, right? Rashi is saying that authority was granted to set up legislation that would protect God's law, but not to set up second order legislation. Right? And that's how it's normally presented. The problem is that the evidence in Chazal is that Rashi is not the only possibility, to put that nicely. It is not the only possibility. What is the other logical possibility? Right? One possibility is they can't. What is the other logical possibility?
It's not one on the other. They're just both towards the same
direction. No. What is the other possibility as to why they don't?
They don't want to.
They don't want to. Correct. Either they can't or they don't want to. Lumai nafkamina. I can't believe I'm asking this question, but this is a pretty easy nafkamina. What's the difference between being unable to do something and not wanting to do something?
Because if you want to, it's
a... Yes. The nafkamina is, what if they decide they want to? Right? According to Rashi, are they allowed to?
No.
Correct. According to the possibility that they don't want to.
Sure. Yes.
Sure. Now, before I show you an even earlier source than Rashi, who says that it's about they don't want to, let me show you why one might think we should accept a position other than Rashi, because I know what I'm doing right now is chutzpah, right? I'm challenging Rashi. I'm sorry. Chatasi lelokim. Okay. Number two is talking about all the different things that we can't do because we want to protect basar b'chalav, which is not treif, it's asur because of basar b'chalav. Good. Enough times and maybe you'll get that. Right? And then you'll stop saying, oh, basar b'chalav, it's treif. No, in fact, if it was treif, it might not be basar b'chalav. Right?
It can be both.
No, it cannot be both.
Really?
That's what I just said.
Okay,
because it is clear, Medina de Gemara, that basar b'chalav is only with kosher meat. Right? Kosher species, like cow and not pig. Right? It is a machloket, rishonim and achronim, whether not kosher, but kosher species, right, like trefa, nevela, things like that, whether you can have basar b'chalav. Right?
You still couldn't eat the trefa.
But according to the Rambam, you cannot... Right, you cannot.
Okay, so treif and chalav isn't...
Bidiyuk, they actually would not work. If it's treif, then it is only usur because it's treif and not because of basar b'chalav. And yes, there is a nafkamina because the nafkamina is sur hana'a. Basar b'chalav is usur in benefit. By the way, what is the big relevant shayla for this? You're like thinking, when does this ever happen in my life? So that might be one, but that might be a different one. But that doesn't happen so often, but the one that happens, I mean, that happens sometimes. But what's the most common shayla that... Is animal food. Right? Dog food. Right? Dog food, if it's pig and milk... Right? Then you're allowed to feed it your animal. If it's cow and milk, then it depends on this machlokes.
Right?
What?
You can milk to your animal?
Of course, because it's not basar b'chalav. It's only treif. It's only basar tameh. Right? And you're allowed to feed not kosher animals to your dog. But you can't serve kosher animals that were cooked in milk, that'd be basar b'chalav.
But what if it's treif?
If it's treif or nevela,
so hope the cow was so treif for it to be.
No, then it would be a machlokes.
Oh,
because according to half the Rishonim, according to the majority of Rishonim, it would be usur. According to the Rambam, it'd be mutter.
Well, doesn't make difference if it's
difference. And that was why Reganak told me that he got a call once from a dog food company that wanted a hechsher from the OU. right? And he said, what meat do you use? And they said, cow. He said, can you use pig? And they're like, wait, are you telling me that the OU wants us to use pig? He's like, yes, we absolutely. We will not give you a hexer. This is cow meat. But if it's pig, then it is kosher.
He has no problem. In other words, he has no problem that you give it to any animal if you do pig and milk.
So. Correct. But if it's cow and milk, you can't.
Yeah, I know, because you're doing because
you're not a benefit.
Yeah.
Correct. And that's enough, Kamina. That's right.
I understand, but still. And I was with
yes, it's weird. You're this is the one time.
Okay, but guess what? If you say, ooh, it's weird, you might end up doing something which is worse, which is giving them, you know, cow and milk, right? Yes, you're letting your emotions get in the way of halacha. It's terrible. No, the halacha is clear on this one, right? That it okay.
Started the whole trait for halal thing.
Okay, so now the Gemara says, Amar of Yosef, Shma mina basar of bechalav deoraita. So it's a machlokas in the Gemara whether chicken and milk is the rabbanon deoraita. So at this stage in the Gemara introduces the position of Yosef that poultry and milk is biblical. The Gemara says, why would I think that it is biblical? Because the Gemara says, the context is, I should have given you the Mishnah, is asar la halotan ala shulchan, right? That you can't eat milk and meat at the same table. Right? That is the halacha. Right? You are not allowed to eat milk and meat at the same table. If you are eating milk and he's eating meat, you cannot eat at the same table.
Correct.
Right? Unless you have a hikar. Unless, like, you put down a...
He has a mat for his mac and cheese, so I don't...
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, like yes. It's happened in my family.
It happens in most people's families at some point.
But chicken wasn't considered meat; it was considered poultry. How does that help the case of?
So we just said. So the Gemara, the Mishnah includes that you can't have chicken and milk at the same table. So he says. So Rabbi Yosef says that must mean that according to this position of the Mishnah, we're poskening that poultry is biblically meat. Because otherwise, this would be a second order gzeirah. Why? Because biblically, you can only not cook cow with milk. But you're allowed to cook chicken with milk, right? And therefore, that's one gzeira. But then to say that, me, they're abundant, I'm not allowed to cook chicken with milk, so therefore I can't have you eating chicken at the table. You having milk at the table would be a second order gzeira. Uh-huh. And therefore, if the Mishnah says that you can't eat chicken and milk at the same table, it must be going according to the position that cooking chicken and milk together is biblically prohibited, not rabbinic. Because then it would be a first order gzeira, not a second.
It was a rabbinical one.
It is a machlokes whether cooking chicken and milk is rabbinic or biblical. But the Gemara is saying, if you hold you can't eat chicken and milk at the same table, then it must mean that you hold that chicken and milk are biblically prohibited, because otherwise it would be a second order gzeira, right? Namely, not eating chicken and milk at the same table is meant to protect you from eating chicken and milk which are cooked together, and not eating chicken and milk cooked together is itself a gzeira on beef and milk. And that would make it exera. And the Gemara says that can't be. And therefore, if you say you can't eat meat, milk and chicken at the same table, it must be that you think that cooking chicken and milk is biblical. Okay?
For those people that think it's
what do you mean by cooking chicken with milk? What do you mean by that?
That's only
cooking chicken with milk.
Yeah. I know.
That's what I meant. I don't know. I didn't mean anything like more lumpy.
Stuffing your turkey with cheese.
Everyone agrees you're not allowed to do it. But the question is that rabbinic or biblical? Doraisa derabanan. Right? The Gemara says it must be that our Mishnah is assuming it's D'oraisa, because if it was D'rabbanan, so then cooking chicken and milk is itself a gzeira for beef and milk.
Okay.
And therefore, you should be allowed to eat chicken and milk at the same table, right? Because that would only be, because otherwise it would be a gzeira l'gzeira.
Yeah, point being.
That.
No, I understand what you said.
That is the point! Stop asking me that!
Wait, so hold on.
So would that be...
No!
So what were we... I get what you're saying, but...
The Gemara is saying, by the fact that the Mishnah prohibits eating chicken and milk at the same table...
It's D'oraisa.
It must mean that the Mishnah thinks that eating chicken and milk, which are cooked together, is biblically prohibited.
Okay.
Because otherwise, eating chicken and milk at the same table would be a second order gzeira. A gzeira le gzeira.
What's a welcome?
Just how we connect this whole thing.
So the Gemara says, de'isakadaitach derabanan. Because if you thought it was only rabbinic, achila gufa gzeira, then eating them together is only rabbinic, it's only a decree. Va'anog nigzer ha'allah atu achila. And you're going to decree putting it on the table as a gzeira against eating it. And then the Gemara says, "Umina tamer to logas rinang zero. Why not? Who says I'm not allowed to make a second order gzeira?
Well, no,
Ditnan.
I feel like there you could keep like switching it between different modes.
Ditnan. Because the Mishnah says, Chalas chutz la'aretz, nechelas emezar al shulchan, benin is a kohen sheyirtze. Right? Chala of chutz la'aretz can be eaten with the zar on the shulchan, right? And can be given to any kohen that you want. Right.
What's a lachon that myself that chicken is derabanan?
Now, what's the problem in this Gemara? Right. So the Gemara says here that what? Right. So the Gemara gives a bizarre answer. Right. Because the Gemara says, why don't you make a gzera like gzera? What's the Gemara's answer?
Why can't you make a gzera like
gzera? So what's the Gemara's answer? Because we know that by challah we don't forbid putting it on the table with someone who might eat it, even though when we're dealing with challah derabanan, right? So what does that imply? Challah derabanan, challah chutz la'aretz.
Okay.
So the Gemara says we allow a kohen to eat with a non-kohen at the table. So you see that we don't set up second order gzeirot by challah. But what does that imply?
It's not proof to do the same thing with the animal.
So what does that imply? No. See, it implies this is weird because the simple implication of the Gemara, right? You should have just said, "What do you mean? Why don't you make a gzeirot like gzeira?" Because you're not allowed to make a gzeirah like gzeirah. Instead, what does the Gemara do? The Gemara says, it's not that we're conceptually opposed to making gzeirah like gzeirah, is that in similar cases about eating, we didn't set up a gzeirah like gzeirah. Right? But that's weird, right? The Gemara asked this bizarre question. How do you know that by Yisra Achila, we don't set up gzeirah like gzeirah?
All right.
Because by challah, by rabbinic challah, we allow a kohen and not going to sit at the same tables. You see, we don't set up double order gzeirot, right? Second order gzeirot. But the Gemara should have just said, "What do you mean? We're not allowed to set up gzeirah l'gzeirah." But the Gemara's answer seems to be, "We could if we wanted to, but in a similar case, we just didn't."
I thought it was said in the Torah about the gzeiras. You can't.
That's how Rashi.
That's what I said. This is the first problem. The second problem is a line which comes up like 10 times in Shas. Which, or probably more, which is number 3. That every time the Gemara says, wait a second, isn't that a second order gzeira? He gufa gzeira v'ana nekum gzeira v'gzeira? So the Gemara says, kula chada gzeira he, it's an illusion. It's one big gzeira with 100 details, right? You know, oh yeah. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, oh, okay, so whatever, 6 is sort of protecting 5 and 5 is... We're sort of protecting 4 and 4, 3 and 3, 1, you know, 2 and 1, etc. But, you know, it's one category of gzeira. So that's okay. Now, according to Rashi, that sounds like you would have to say that means formally, right? If something is conceived of as a second order gzeira, it doesn't work. But if it's conceived of multiple laws that happen to reinforce each other, but they're conceived of as a single gzeira, so then you saved yourself. But it's really weird. Right, because this sounds like semantics. Now, semantics make a lot more sense if you say the problem is we don't like making second order zero, but as long as we can explain that it's not really, so like, big deal. Right, but if you think that this is a real, real rule, so you're tricking God? God, it looks like we have 6 layers of chumrah. It's not true. We have 1 gzeira which has 6 layers of chumrah.
It's a loophole
in a, right, to create a chumrah. Right, normally we look for loopholes for kulot. No, it's rabbinic loophole to allow themselves to be super machmir. Okay, it's not impossible for Rashi, but it's a bit weird. Now look at 5. Merame Sada. Who's the Merame Sada? Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, also known as Naftali. Let's just see if we can figure this out.
Oh.
Hint. Naftali. Yeah, there you go. Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. The Nitziv. Right? The Nitziv. Right? His parents and Shas, Merame Sada, they're right. He says, I have another reason I don't like Rashi, which is Umashma Dirak Ba'arayati Kudrash Zeh. Even if you think that this is a real drasha, it's only a drasha in what context? Arayot. right? By forbidden relationships. V'lo b'chol ha'Torah kula. He says, V'afal gav d'Rashi perish b'reish m'sechas beitza. It's true that Rashi, in the beginning of beitza, says, D'ha'dein gozun g'zeru l'g'zeru mishum she'en osim mishmeres l'mishmeres. Mikom makom. Yeah, Rashi does say that still. Eina kavana b'chol ha'Torah kula lam du g'zeres ma'ikra. He can't mean that we really learn all g'zeres from this pasuk. Elet k'mo b'arayot d'ish smach l'g'zeru. It must be that, like, there's an asmachta by a riot. Mikom makom eikin einos in mishmeres l'mishmeres. Mikol shekin l'kol ha'Torah kula. So you can pull it, you know, whatever. It's like logical. If we don't do it by a riot, because of a pasuk that's not a real pasuk, then we probably won't do it elsewhere. But what's he pointing out? Right? Rashi is a bit strange, because Rashi takes something that, according to the Gemara, is an asmachta in the context of a riot, and turns it into a real rule in kol ha'Torah kula. So the Nitziv is like, I mean, you could... Right?
But we don't.
Yeah.
Wow.
He says, V'had me'emez chakru ha'marayim al-shniyos yosir me'harba egzeros ha'inam yishum shalom atzino shagadza al-dava she'ishbo zeh ma'ariz or ma'shenken shiru who had their gummer. He said, really, the reason that Chazal were so bothered by the shniyot la'arayot is because they were very weird. Because shniyot la'arayot is not protecting other arayot. It's creating new arayot. Right? Saying that this woman, there was no problem, right? A normal gzera would be, you can't marry your aunt, right? So don't be misyached with your aunt.
Okay.
Right? A very weird zera would be, you can't marry your aunt, so don't marry this relative who is not your aunt because...
You might come to marry her.
What? Because what exactly? What exactly am I going to do?
You might come to marry your aunt as well.
Yes, that's... Like,
but why would you think that?
Right.
Yachid is different than...
Correct. So this is why the Nitziv says, by Araya, Chazal were particularly confused. What exactly were we doing here? What was the point?
Wasn't polygamy a thing?
You can marry more than one wife. So, but what does that mean? Right. Oh, if I marry, you know, whatever cousin is going to be an erva, midirabanan, I will come up to marrying my whole ganza mishpacha. Like, I don't understand. Like, what exactly was the smara here?
Yeah, it's a,
right. It's a bit of a weird thing. So,
yeah.
So if you look in the Tshuvat HaGeonim in the Chemda Gnuza, in a tshuva to Rav Sar Shalom Gaon, he takes a very different approach to Rashi, and he says it is untrue. Sharei amru chachamim b'chol makom gzera l'gzera lo gazrinan dimken itmalei gzerot. He said, nah, why don't we have second order gzerot? Because then we'll have too many gzerot. We already have a lot. Can you imagine if we just made a rule and said yes? Not only are you allowed to protect the Torah, but you can protect the Torah, the Rabbanans, and then you can protect the Rabbanans, right? It's like, as it is, look how long our halacha books are, because we have the Raisa with rabbinic laws, built on rabbinic laws, built on rabbinic laws. Imagine if the rabbi just said, yeah, we're allowed to have rabbinic laws on rabbinic laws on rabbinic laws, right? We do it anyways. Can you imagine what would have happened if we said you can, right?
Pretty scary.
Good. So the Emek Halacha picks up on this. So the Emek Halacha is Rabbi Lam's grandfather, if I remember correctly.
Those aren't words we're here
today. What?
If I remember correctly.
Well, Ari Lam once explained to me the relative. Like he was like his great-great-grandfather. That was how I heard it. But I believe it's Yeshua Baumol, who I believe is his maternal grandfather. Could be his great-grandfather, but I think it was his maternal grandfather. And he says, "Dine b'had de'ein gozim gzeir l'gzeir yeshtei avano." There are two ways of understanding this. Ha'echad who de'ein ha'yucholet b'yad chazal l'gzor yoser mechad l'gzeira. One is to say they have no ability, right? Rashi. K'diyol of mikra de'mishmartem ve'lo mishmeret l'mishmeret da'asur l'gzor yoter mechad l'gzeira. Right, that's Rashi. Right, make one order gzeira, not second order gzeira. Hasheni, yesh lomar debeemet ein iser l'gzor yoser megzera achas. The other possibility is, yeah, you could do it if you wanted to. Rak du mekubal, it's a chazal shlo gzor rakhado gzera, but it's not what we do. And he says uveemet ki belashon hamurgal b'shas va'anan nekum v'nigzor muhuktat yechol v'yachal megzor rak du neged hamikubal. Said, look at the language of Chazal. They don't say ein goes in gzera l'gzera. What do they say? He gufa gzera va'anu nekam zera lazera. That's a gzera, and we're going to make another one? Right? It almost sounds like... He said it's not muhrach. Right? But he said the language points in the direction of marasar shalom ga'on. Right? Which is, look, you know, we don't like doing it. He says, besides, said, now you might have said that it's only a rishus of Chazal to set up protective gzerot, but that doesn't sound that way in Zroim, in Rambam's Hakdama to Mishnah, rather, where he sounds like it's an obligation. He said, I'll prove to you that there's no pasuk, because even if you think asu mishmeret is a rule, it's not a limitation. What is it? It's granting Chazal the authority to make the first gzera in the first place. Right? Meaning, even if the pasuk were a real drasha, it's not a drasha telling you you're not allowed to make second order gzerot. It's a drasha telling you you are allowed to make first order gzerot, and you have to. Right? Meaning it's a directive to make single order gzerot. Right? The implication that you can't make second order gzerot is already a second limud from that pasuk. Right? Besides the fact that it's only an asmachta to begin with.
It's a gzera.
The Yesh Lomar, a perish the Lomishmer, and I should kelkach an enam chayovim kanal visur lekha. He said, and besides, at the best, what would, even if it's a real drasha, what should it mean? You aren't obligated to make second order gzerot. Right? Asu mishmeret. Make a protective order gzera on my Torah. V'lo mishmeret l'mishmeret. What might that mean? Not what Rashi thinks, which is you're not allowed to, but you don't have to. Right, you only have to protect my laws. You have no obligation to protect other, right, other people's laws. To take a drasha which doesn't really exist, right? And even if you did think it exists, what it really means is you're obligated to protect the Torah, and then, but not obligated to protect your own laws, and then transform it from what you're obligated to do into what you're not allowed to do is so many steps removed from what is going on in that pasuk. Never, according to the Rambam, also you have to say it's just a rule. That's what they normally did. They could, they just didn't. And he said, why wouldn't you do it? He said, because every gzera is only a slippery slope. Right? It might be that you will violate the biblical law. Right? So, it's not like you violate the rabbinic law and now you're going to violate the biblical law. It's a gzera. You might do it. So he's like, how many protective layers do you need exactly? And he said, besides, how often is it that I'm going to violate the second order gzera, which would lead me to the first order gzera, which would lead me to the doraisa? He said, that's so rare that it's a milsud lo shchicha, and there's another rule, which is milsud lo shchicha lo gozer be'rabanan. The ze having milsud lo shchicha sheyava lasus isur, milsud lo shchicha lo gozer be'rabanan. Good. Now one more gemara, and then we talk about this outside. The gemara in 8 is a, I like this one, because in this gemara it sounds like, right, a good proof to Marsar Shalom Gaon. Because just look at this Gemara. The Mishnah says, Chal Yod Achar HaShabbat. Beit Shammai Yomim Magbilin Akom Milifnei HaShabbat. If you have Yom Tov after Shabbos. So Beit Shammai says, Tovil everything before Shabbos. Ubeit Hillel Omrim Kelim Milifnei HaShabbos V'Adam B'Shabbos. Beit Hillel says, look, you're not allowed to put Kelim in a mikvah on Shabbos, but a person go to a mikvah on Shabbos. Vishavin Shemashikin as Amayim Bekli Evan Lataran of Alomat Bilan, but they agree that you can do Hashaka on Mayim. What's Hashaka, Yosef?
Hashaka.
Yes. Hashaka on Mayim is where you have Tamei Mayim, you put it in a mikvah, and it mixes with the Tahar water, right? And therefore everything becomes Tahar. That's called Hashaka. It's not Tvila. You don't Tovil water. Mikvahs now. It's called Bidiuk, right? That's exactly what it is, right? Most of our mikvot are not all rainwater.
As you can
right?
tell by the heavily chlorinated.
Correct. Smell. What you have is you have one mikvah of rainwater and then a bunch of borot of tap water, and then you just open them into each other for a second, right? And halakhically they all become one. Right, and then you can go to the mikvah in non-rainwater, right? That's not halacha.
Can you close the hole, or do you have to keep it open the entire time?
No, no. Once it's open, it's done. It's all magic water. It's magic.
Why would you have tahash that you need to bring it to a... How would you get impure water?
The water touches a dead person. I don't know.
Someone died in the mikvah.
This is only a case of the mikvah, right? It's not like when you're cap.
If you're a kohen, you can't have that tummy water, because then you wouldn't be able to eat truma. It'll touch your truma.
How would your glass get impure water?
Your tummy, you touch it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I pour him water
So the Gemara says. The kulei alma miyas kli b'shabbos lo. Everyone at least agrees that you aren't allowed to put a vessel in the mikvah on Shabbos. My time, why not? Rabbi Yosef Amar Gzeirah Shem Eschikta. Rabbi Yosef says because you might squeeze it, right? Because it could be that, right? It could be clothes also. A kli doesn't necessarily mean a plate. It could mean, right? Your shirt. You might squeeze it, fine. So Amar le Abayi, teinach kelim de meschidahu. He said, okay, that makes sense for clothes, which you can squeeze. Kelim lav meschidahu. What about clothes that don't get, right, don't squeeze well, like, you know, plates? It's very hard to squeeze a china plate. You know, okay, you have to tovel it, a metal plate, whatever. Okay? Michael Amar. Amar le, gzera hani atu hani. He says, it's a gzera of these on these. What does the Gemara not say? Correct. Meaning this Gemara is very clear that sometimes we make zeros, which sounds very much like Marasar Shalom Gaon, right? Which is, we don't usually, but sometimes we do. Now, let me give you a conceptual background to it. And this is something, this is an article I come back to a lot. It was an excellent article by Rav Yuval Shurlo, who's Rosh Hashiva in Arad Shahul, which used to be Petah Tikva, but now it's in Kfar Batya. Okay? He was asked... What time is it, by the way?
Right now.
Oh, good. So he was asked the following question. He was asked to weigh in on one of the ethical shailas I've discussed with a few of you guys that has been mitfaltel et ha'olam, which is, should the government prevent people from choosing the sex of their child in IVF cases, right?
What?
In IVF cases, right? In vitro fertilization, right? Like they're having the child, right? They're creating the child out of
in a
petri dish, and then in putting it in, right? Should they forbid people from choosing the sex of the child? What's the problem, right? Why do you think that Western society is not halachic, right? Let's leave halacha for a moment. Why do you think Western societies are reticent to allow people to do that?
So you're not giving a kid a choice.
What?
Who cares?
No, what? Reticent. And why are they not comfortable letting people do that?
Are they?
Okay, so to give you an example, in America, no, in America it's legal. In Canada, if you do it, it carries a 10-year jail sentence and $500,000 fine.
Wow.
What?
They're authoritarian.
What are they worried about? No, they're worried about China, where you get a strong imbalance of a sex because people are
controlling it.
Right? Because people only want males, right?
If you change your gender, that's not a problem.
Or they're worried about a slippery slope to eugenics, right? It starts with sex, and the next thing you know, we'll only be having kids with good, you know, math skills.
Brent has a book written in 1914 on the eugenic family. That was a very fun book to read over Shabbos.
Right, so that is, right, that's what they're worried about. Now, we can get into whatever. Someone asked Rav Shurlo, the government asked Rav Shurlo about this, right? Israel has a very complicated position on this, which tries to straddle the complexities here. Okay. And he says, look, let's leave for a moment the halachic concerns aside. Let's assume that it's mutter, okay, from a halachic perspective. Let's assume. It's not clear that it's mutter, but let's assume that it's mutter on a formal level. So, what does halacha teach us about slippery slopes argument? Because that's really what you're saying, right? It's not a problem fundamentally, but it might lead to something bad, okay? So he says, if you look through Chazal, Chazal have three rules that govern, right? I'll do it in Hebrew and English, right? Three rules that govern when you do and don't make zera. In Hebrew, he calls them sikui, sikun, and mechir, which in English mean chance, right, or probability, right, danger, and cost. Right, he says, Chazal, when they make Zerot, balance three factors. Right, what do these mean? What does it mean? So he said, Sikui. What is Sikui?
Like the likelihood that you're
right. How likely is it that if I let you violate X, right, this will lead to Y? Right? He says, how do I know Chazal care about this?
Because well, every other care about him.
So he says, the number one rule that proves this is Milzad lo shchicha. Right? Lo gazru be rabana. That if something is not common, we don't make it zero. Right? Because the chance that it's going to cause a problem are not likely. Right? Sikun is how bad would it be if Y happened? Right? So he says, how do we know this? So one of them is Ain Gozrin Gzera Ligzera. Right? Which he says, really,
you have to
somewhere...
turn Gezerah into the Y.
Right? Because, right? If Y is a Daraisa, this would be really bad. Right? But if...
Y is just another Gezerah, then...
Correct. But if Y is another Gezerah, Nishkeferlich. Right? It's not worth it. Also...
Why isn't it worth it?
And as... Now, as...
Why isn't it worth it?
Because this is only the Rabbanan, so who cares? What's the worst that'll happen?
Okay, no.
You'll end up violating the Rabbanan.
Then it's the Rabbanan.
But the Rabbanan's only trying to protect the Doraisa, so what's the worst that'll happen? You're gonna set up 100 Rabbanans?
It's not that big of a deal.
Right? The danger is only here. Right? What?
It's a cost benefit analysis.
Correct.
On the case.
Correct. Now, he also, now, another way of looking at Ain goes in Xer Lexer, right, is that it's also a problem of Sikui. Right? Meaning, right, this was what we already just saw in the Emek Halacha, which is, if it's two orders removed from the Doraisa, the probability, right? Right. Setting up one Xera might lower the likelihood someone will violate it from 10% to 3%. Setting up a second Xera is likely to move it from what? 3% to 2.9%? Like, big deal. Right? Not so impressive. There are other rules. I'm just giving you the basic outline. And then he says there's Mechir. Right? Cost. So he says, what does that mean? So that's things like, and I mentioned this to Ephraim, right? Things like... Ain goes in Xera at Sibor, Ellen Kane Robot Sibri Holon Lama Bo. We don't make Xera if the community can't handle it. Because even though, what is that saying? Even when Xera is worthwhile, if the community can't handle Xera, then the cost of Xera is too high. Right? Or, B'makum Tsar, Logazar Rabbanan. B'makum Hesed, Logazar Rabbanan. Right? If it causes loss, we waive the rabbinic decree. If it causes pain, we waive the rabbinic decree. Because then the cost of the Xera is too high. Right? So, based on this analysis, what might you say, right, if you pasking like Marsar Shalom Go, meaning that fundamentally Chazal have the authority to set up second order Xera, they just usually don't, right? Based on this analysis, tell me, when might you expect Chazal to set up second order Xera? So one is, if it's really bad, right? If the sikun is very bad, namely, that what? If X might lead to Y, and Y might lead to Z, but Z is really bad, right? You might do this. So, for example, right? Yeah, death, really bad. Therefore, don't kill people, don't be negligent, also, don't run red lights, right? Right? We set up, in civil law, so many, right, things to protect human life, because, you know, death is really bad, right? You know, wear a seatbelt, and don't run the red light, and keep the speed limit, right? V'chulei, 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 right? Because we don't want people dying, right? In halacha, we call this, as we'll see in a moment, the Shita in Rishonim, that Yesh goes from Zer L'Gzera, Beser Kares, or Beser Misa. That if what you're trying to protect is not a regular lav, but an Iser Kares, we let you do it. Another possibility. What if X very quickly leads to Y, and very quickly leads to Z? Right? Meaning, is not a very effective Xera as things go, right? We know that, look, if we said, you know, don't sleep, well, no, whatever, we'll do Avodah Zarah, right? If we said, look, we don't want you to worship Avodah Zarah, and we don't want you to intermarry, and therefore we'll just tell you, don't be misyached with idolaters, but you are allowed to eat with them, drink with them, party with them, right? So what do we do? Right, this is a Gemara Mifureshet later in Avodah Zarah, which is Gozru Yenan. Right, what do? We go there Pita Mishun Shmanan, Ushmanan Mishum Yenam, Uyenam Mishum Binoseyem, Ubinoseyem Mishum Davaracher, Davaracher Mishum Davaracher. Right? Meaning, we forbade their bread because of their oil, and their oil because of their wine. Their wines, you don't marry their daughters, and daughters, you don't worship Avodah Zarah, and worshiping Avodah Zarah, and it goes on and on, because, right, we know that first of all, the eventuality is really bad, and second of all, right, once you start drinking with non-Jews, right, it goes pretty fast to intermarriage, right? The slippery slope there is pretty darn steep, right? So, when you keep that in mind, right, which is, normally we don't set up, now, why do we not usually set up 0 and 0? Because it's not dangerous enough, and the cost is too high to fill our lives with 0. But once you know that fundamentally you're allowed to, it'll make sense, and what I gave you is just the Micropedia Talmudic, because I don't want to spend really more than one day on this. Micropedia Talmudic is an abridged version of the Encyclopedia Talmudic, which is all online. Okay? And I just gave you a summary of Shem Shita where you'll see that logically how this works out. Okay, so how much time do we have? 10 minutes? 9 minutes. Okay, fine. So whatever we get through, we get through. Whatever we don't, fine. Okay. Bisurei Shabbat. Yeshnam Bisurei Shabbat Shenechel B'Amoraim goes on with Zeru Gzera. Bayisur Shabbos. There's a machlokas even in the Amoraim whether you can have second order Gzera. Abay Oser Lamod. Mishabbos Bershus HaYachad Bershus HaRabim. Loshid Rosh HaKarmelis. Velishchosam. Abay allows you to stand in Rosh HaYachad in a private domain or a Rosh HaRabim and stick your head into a Karmelis, which is a Rosh HaRabim Derabanan, right? A rabbinic domain. And to drink there, kederech sha'aser lamod birshus ha. Sorry, he forbids this. Kederech sha'aser lamod birshus ha'yach. Rishus birshus aram gerashem yotia kli love. Right, the halacha is you can't carry from one rishus to another. So we're worried. We don't let you take your head from your house, stick it out into rishus aravim, and drink from a water fountain there. Why? Because we're worried that you'll instead of drinking shit from the water fountain, you will take a cup that's sitting by the water fountain, fill it with water, and pull it in through your window. Right. Okay, don't stick your mouth into a cup that's right in Rosh Hashanah, because you might end up actually picking up the cup and dragging it inside. Okay? It happened, apparently.
This is a bizarre archetypal example.
Correct.
Like, the chicken head I thought was pretty weird. This is just like, no.
Anyways, fine. So, but Abayi says you can't even do the same thing into a Karmelis, which is only a rabbinic Rosh HaSarabim. Right? Meaning it is not, right, Midaraisa, you only can't carry from Rosh HaYochid to Rosh HaSarabim, or vice versa.
Right.
A Karmelis is neither here nor there. Right? A Karmelis is a place which is neither here nor there. That is what it is. It is a Rishus, which is neither Rishus HaYachid nor Rishus HaRabim. No, it's not a neutral zone. Now it's a Makom Ptur. Right? It is not a neutral zone. It is neither. Right? What it is... But there, rabbinically, you can't carry from a Karmelis to Rishus HaRabim or to Rishus HaYachid. Okay? It's not neutral. It's in between. There's a difference. Okay? V'Rava Matir. And Rava says you are allowed to. She gufa gzera v'ein ligzor gzera l'zera. Because Rava says, look, of course you can. Because even if you did carry from the Karmelis into the Rishus HaYachid or the Rishus HaRabim, that would only be rabbinic. So telling you can't stick your mouth into that water bottle, right, is itself a gzera l'gzera. But what do you see, right, that you have a machlokas Rav and Abaye, whether by Shabbos you set up second order gzera. And so the Rishonim argue, why are you allowed to do this? So look at the rule. So Rashi says, Yeshua Mashiach goes there to be Shuri Shabbos. Some say he only does it by Shabbos. Now that really shouldn't help Rashi, right? Because if you don't have the authority, why do you suddenly have the authority on Shabbos? Right? So Tosfos says maybe it's only by Hotza'ah. Why Hotza'ah? Because no one takes carrying seriously. Right? But what is that telling you? Right? He's saying, look, what Sosa's telling you, really, we have the authority to set up second order Gezeira, but we don't normally do it unless the Sikkun is really high. Right? Or the Sikkun is really high, however you want to look at it. Right? Meaning, this is really dangerous, right? Because it's a Shabbos, and it's very likely you're going to violate because people don't understand the gravity of carrying on Shabbos.
So if two out of the three are very high, then you would.
Right? And he said, therefore, you're allowed to do it. But my point is that his very analysis assumes that it's just a. Normally we don't do it, but if there's very good reason to, because we're talking about it's a Shabbos, and we're talking about something that people really do violate.
Here's not a good enough reason to.
And the fact that. It makes your life really difficult because you aren't allowed to stick your head out of the window and drink from the water on the other side. You can live with that. Now, the Ramban, on the other hand, says, nah. Abaye holds kula chada gzeire. He holds it's one big zera. What is the Ramban clearly assuming? Like Rashi, right? Namely, that you're not allowed to make a second order gzeira. And therefore, if you see Abaye making a second order gzeira, then it must be that you're not, you don't see what you think you're seeing, right? It's not really Xera like Xera. Okay. The second thing is B'mekomot Shegazru. I love this one, right? He just says, "Oh, you're not allowed to." What about all the places where you do? And then he gives you a list, right? So I don't need to go through all of them, but the point is, we do this all the time by Mukta. They're Xera like Xera, right? By the tefillah case we just saw in Beitza, we have a second order gzeira, meaning sometimes we just do this, right? So, proof one, by Shabbos, we do it. Proof two, we do it all the darn time, right? Now, b'isurei kares, many we shown him. Ramban, b'is Yosef, says, by isur kares, we let you do gzeira, and therefore by nida, you will see we have 17th order gzera, as you will see. Right, gzera, gzera. Some say you can do two, but not three. What?
With 17th an exaggeration?
Maybe mildly. Maybe.
Oh, perhaps.
Perhaps.
I was wondering.
Another thing that you have in certain achronim is that, bidavar matsui, if something is very, very common, we allow you to make second order gzera. Even if it's not so misukah. That's telling you this, right? If the chances are high, so we will make Xera like Xera. And then he gets into, right, a riot. You can look through it yourself, but the point is that I think, right, just looking at this Mikropedia Talmudit summary, what do you see? That I think that the Pashas is not Rashi. The Pashas is Marsar Shalom Gaon, which is, look, we don't want to do it because we don't want to make people's lives miserable by making a million zero. Right? But the point is, it's just a rule of thumb. We don't like doing it. But if the danger is really high, we're talking about Isser Kares, Isser Misa, or there's a really high chance that if we don't protect this law, it's going to be violated because it's something that happens all the time, then we do. Right? Because, in general, we don't want to do it. But if we need to, we do. Right? And that's why I don't think it's such a kasha. The fact that many places in Shas, in fact, we have Xero Lixero? Yeah, in a Harami, we do. Why? Because Marsar Shalom Gaon is right. Which is, this is not a real rule. Right? It's not a rule like you don't have the authority to set up second order Xero. It's just that we didn't want to, so normally we don't. And when you see that we did it, we do. And by the way, this helps me understand Kula Chada Gzera. It's not semantics. It's saying, look, really Chazal are allowed to do it if they wanted to. But if they can conceptualize it as one big rule, so then they'll do it. If they can't, they won't. But like, you're going to tell me, oh, it's semantics, you're tricking God. They're not tricking anybody. If they wanted to, they could just set up a second order Gzera. They don't like doing it. So if they can conceptualize it as one big Gzera, then they're fine with it. If they can't, so they don't. Right? And sometimes they do. Right? The point is not a rule. It's just what they did in general. Like I said, this is just something that you should keep in mind because you'll see it around and you will see people presenting Rashi's position as if there's not another position. And then you can say, oh, it's not true. If you look in the Tshuva Gonim, Chemda Genuza, you'll see that an even earlier position than Rashi, Marsar Shalom Gon, right, disagrees with you, and therefore it is not heresy to say that, in fact, we do this, right? In fact, it is the earlier position than Rashi's, even though people will tell you, oh, it's Rashi, and Chachamim is Rashi, but, you know, there are other traditions.